This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
You know, just trying to get through another winter here, you know, we've got a very inspirational topic for people to listen to be inspired by.
I mean, we obviously have, you know, spiking COVID cases. It's sure. I'm looking out my window to a driveway filled with snow. I just need something to cheer me up. So why not? Let's just talk about teams getting their doors blown off and just getting absolutely destroyed by other teams. Biggest blowouts in NBA history. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it's inspiring for the teams that win.
Yeah, I guess it depends what end of the spectrum you're on. Unfortunately, I believe you and I are going to start the show with personal cases of us seeing the teams that we wanted to root for get blown out. Although yours is a little bit of a, I'm conflicted on yours, but we'll get to that when we get to it, I guess.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Why don't you start with yours?
Yeah. So we'd had this idea of coming up with this topic a couple weeks ago, back when the Grizzlies and the Thunder, which we'll talk about in a moment, that was in early December, the biggest blowout in NBA history, 73 points, Grizzlies, Thunder. We'll get into that in a little bit more details. But then we kind of held it off for a few other things. We did our Christmas episode. We did a few other topics here and there. And then we decided to come back to this show saying, hey, you know, we had a lot of notes prepared. It's a topic that can always, you can always get to biggest blowouts. There's always biggest blowouts. There's always fun stories with all of these. But in that time, I actually witnessed an all-time blowout. Maybe not an all-time, like, record-setting blowout, but at least as far as I know, and I guess I would have to go and look at every single game that I've ever attended and try to figure out how to do that. But as far as, like, aesthetically and what I felt like in the building, I attended my biggest blowout ever a couple weeks ago. When I saw the Warriors face the Chicago Bulls on January 14th in Chicago. This is supposed to be a big game. Two titans of the NBA, I believe. The Warriors number one in the West and the Bulls number one in the East. Battling on Friday night on ESPN. There was a palpable buzz in the building. Everybody was excited. I got a text from a friend who said, hey, I have an extra ticket. Do you want to go? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I had to pay for that ticket because he's like, look, this is an in-demand ticket, so I'm just going to sell it. Like, so you're going to have to pay for it. I'm not just going to give it to you for free. And I'm like, I totally get it. I understand. So I probably paid more for this game than I paid for any other game in years and years and years and years. It ended up, I'll tell you, all you have to do is if you type in Warriors Bulls January 14th, the image that comes up is Jonathan Kuminga and Kobe White. Is what the YouTube video shows those two men, which is not good. Let me tell you, if it's the Warriors and the Bulls and it's Jonathan Kuminga and Kobe White, that means things did not go very well. And they did not go very well because the Warriors won 138 to 96, which doesn't quite even, it doesn't quite put in a, because it was like the fourth quarter was like neck and neck or whatever. But yeah, the second quarter was 41-19. Warriors. Curry had 19 points, but he really stopped trying about two quarters in. Zach LaVine got hurt after 4 minutes and left the game with a knee injury. Lonzo Ball left the game early with a knee injury. Jordan Poole had 22 points. The aforementioned Jonathan Kuminga led the Warriors with 25. It was quite the thing. Draymond Green still out. Klay Thompson sitting out back-to-back nights. So there was ominous things that led into the game. But then sitting there live, it was just an absolute, I mean, the doors were just blowing off and just kind of, it sucked to be there. So I guess if you were a Warriors fan there, it was kind of fun, but this wasn't a fun blowout because it wasn't like record setting. It wasn't that crazy. It was just one of those old classic, like, we're way better than this team, so no one that matters is going to play in the second. So I had a lot of Damian Lee, you know. Juan Toscano and a lot of Juan Toscano Anderson. So
you gotta
Chris Chuiza or whatever the hell his name is. A lot of him too. I got like 12 minutes of him, which is not good. I don't want 12 minutes of him.
No,
Bielitsa. I got 24 minutes of Bielitsa.
24
minutes of Bielitsa. Not what I intended when I played when I paid triple digits for this ticket that I was gonna get 24 minutes of Bielitsa. But hey, you know what? It happens.
Hey, you got 10 minutes of Iguodala. You know, you got a love of...
I can't even believe he got in that game at any point. 50-year-old
Iguodala, Well, you got to keep him fresh, you know, just in case. You don't want him to get rusty.
True.
A guy that old, you know, you're going to get rusty if he doesn't get a little bit of time. So it's important. So I have seen a couple of... one extremely dispiriting blowout, which was actually my first live NBA game that I ever attended. And then also one is a... among the greatest, one quarter blowouts in NBA history. So that's going to be fun. So the first one, It was also involved your Chicago Bulls. It was in Atlanta. It was the exact date, January 24th, 2005. This is the time in which I had lived in Atlanta, was getting excited for the Atlanta Hawks. And why not? The Atlanta Hawks, 8-31. You know, you got Antoine Walker. Just
momentum. They'd figured out. You know, you got to lose before you can win. You got to crawl before you can walk. And it felt you know, they've taken their beatings in the early part of the year, but they've righted the shit. Things are looking good. We're starting to, you know.
It's going to get better.
The building blocks, brick by brick. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, so it takes some time. Yeah,
it was not. Yeah, hey, we got Josh Smith. We got Josh Childress. Exciting.
A lot of Joshes.
You got a lot of Joshes. You got Antoine Walker. You got, you know, shooting a lot of shots. You know, that's what
Mike Woodson at the helm. I mean, what's not Billy Knight running the show. It's, of course, it's going to work.
Yeah, you got 46-year-old Kevin Willis, you know, coming off the bench. You know, hey, it's fun.
They still have Gugliotta then, too, right?
They would get Gugliotta in the trade for Antoine Walker. They would get him later in the
season. Oh, okay, you got it. Yeah, whenever you can bring in Tom Gugliotta to right the ship, you got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey. So anyway, so my memory of this was it being complete domination. Eddie Curry just destroying the Hawks, you know, left and right. I think he had an incredible alley-oop in this game. Final result, only 25, 107-82. They were up by 42 points with 9:44 left in the game, but obviously the Hawks rallied to make it close. Again, in my memory, Eddie Curry unstoppable on this night, although the box score says he ended up with merely 19 points, although on 9 of 11 shooting, so very efficient, and 4 rebounds, which is kind of an Eddie Curry night, you know, 4 rebounds.
I'm sure that's the type of game that Scott Skiles would then bitch in the media about afterwards, is that how the hell do you not get rebounds? Come on.
Right.
You're 7 feet tall, just put your hands in the air, just jump, come on. But, right. What a perfect Eddie Curry game there. I love it.
Yeah, Antoine Walker, you know, 3-12 from the field, -44, you know, plus minus. So that's always good. Pedrag Drobniak, he had 1 of 7 from the field, so he was not great there. And I'd kind of forgotten about this until I was just doing some more digging. I watched the Hawks squander a 21-point fourth quarter lead just a couple years later. This game was against the Utah Jazz, December 20th, 2006. And the Hawks lost the fourth quarter by 27 points. It's one of 34 instances in which a fourth quarter had a margin of 27 or more. The Buffalo Braves actually hold the fourth quarter record. They outscored the 73 Celtics by a margin of 35. Interestingly, the Buffalo Braves won 21 games that season. The Celtics won 68 games that season. So that's kind of an incredible, weird little result there. The NBA record for any quarter, by the way, is 36. It's the Lakers did that against the Sacramento Kings in 1987. We're going to have more Sacramento Kings here. Although mostly on the right side of the blowouts here as we go through. So.
I'm looking here. This was the Mehmet Okur game here. He had 12 points in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
Also, Derek Fisher. Could you have let two more annoying guys score all the points? Like, I was hoping that Darren Williams took over, or, you know, Andre Kirilenko, or even Carlos Boozer. Three, like, pretty decent, you know, good players, likable guys to some extent. You let Mehmet Okur and Derek Fisher destroy? Come on. What are we doing?
Speedy Claxton was -27 in the quarter, and Marvin Williams -25 in the quarter. So, yeah,
a little rough.
Well,
Marvin 0-5 in the fourth, man. Just to, you know, you know, you got to shoot out of the slump. So just keep shooting, baby. But
Josh Smith was 1 of 6. That's more in line with the Josh Smith experience that I recall. Anyway, so you know. What triggered this show idea was the 73-point margin, the Grizzlies beating the Oklahoma City Thunder on December 2nd, 2021. At the time, the records Oklahoma City 6-16, Memphis 12-10. What really sealed this as the blowout of all blowouts was the fourth quarter. The Grizzlies, already up by 51, outscored the Thunder 39-17. That's 20 times. There have been 20 occasions where a team has been up 50 or more after the third quarter. Six of those times, they actually ended up being under 50 at the end. So most of the time, they still remain over 50, but a few times there. The Grizzlies only played five players the entire quarter. John Kontgar, Shot 5 of 6, 2 of 3 from
that's
three.
That's not a real person.
Points. It apparently is. Yes. Jarrett Culver.
You're lying. John Conkar is playing in 2022. Get out of here.
Is it Conkar or Conchar? I don't know.
I don't think he's even real. So you're asking the wrong guy.
There you go.
I'm not sure he's a real person. So
all right. Yeah, maybe
John Conkar. No, that's you just grabbed a name from like the 1991 like San Antonio Spurs bench. There's no way this man plays in the NBA today. Get out of here.
All right.
I'm looking at him now. No, this guy doesn't play in the NBA. he's from Chicago. Okay, where the hell did he play at? Maybe I've seen this man play.
Yeah.
Oh, what's Chicago? Well, the town next to me. Okay, so I know this person. Right. So he literally came from the town next to me. Man, my man's playing in the NBA. Wow, good for him.
Wow, that's a nice deal.
Now
I'm
a big John Conkar fan. There you go. Yeah. Actually, I don't know why you're making fun of John Conkar, Jason. He's awesome.
I don't know why.
The western suburbs of Chicago. It's finally about time we got some representation in the NBA.
It's about damn time. So that's great. Well, Jarrett Culver, 5 of 6 for 11 points. The Grizzlies had 6 offensive rebounds, shot 65% from the floor, or 4 of 8 from 3. Their only flaw in the quarter was going 1 for 5 from the free throw line. Meanwhile, the Thunder only took 14 shots to the Grizzlies' 26 in the quarter. They had 6 turnovers. The Grizzlies had none. Ty Jerome and Isaiah Roby played all 12 minutes. The Thunder played 8 of their players in that quarter to, I guess, try to stop the bleeding even more. It is also worth noting the Thunder lost by 57 against the Pacers on May 2nd, 2021. That one was actually in OKC. It set the record for the biggest regular season blowout with the home team on the losing end. There's going to be a playoff one that we're going to talk about in a little while. Only 3 OKC players were in both games, Darius Bazley, Gabriel Deck, and Isaiah Roby. There you go.
Those are definitely some guys.
Those are names.
Yeah, what's interesting is too is you would think like if there was going to be a blowout in the 2022 season, it would happen during like this last weird period we had where like a bunch of teams were missing like 5 of their. No, this is like both teams at quote unquote full strength. You know what I mean? Oklahoma City Thunder. You know what their full strength constitutes is not really. Full strength is their draft picks over the next 10 years is essentially what it is, but
right. I mean, and the Grizzlies were missing the best player in the
right, game. Right. If anything, the Grizzlies were underpowered.
I mean, the Thunder were missing their best player too, so it's a little bit of even there. But that's it wasn't like the Grizzlies were at full strength. The Grizzlies are 12-10 at the time. You know, they're
even before. I mean, because we're talking about this now. Yeah. Like, if this game had happened 2 weeks ago, you could say, oh, okay, cool. Like, the Grizzlies are on fire and they're firing, and then maybe Oklahoma City had like 7 dudes that were out for COVID protocols. Now this is like. Yeah. Grizzlies kind of still trying to figure it out, and the Thunder being the Thunder, and it just sort of happened, and it's weird because there hasn't been a ton of fanfare about it. Like I know when it happened that night, there was a lot of fanfare, but I don't know if it's just because people have kind of resigned themselves to the fate of what the Thunder are, or I don't know. It seems like this should have been a bigger deal, or because it was the Memphis Grizzlies and it's just a team. You know, it wasn't like this team with championship aspirations or whatever. If the Brooklyn Nets went out there and totally destroyed some team or whatever, then maybe but I don't know. Yeah. I guess it's weird that I feel like this one should have had a little bit more buzz about it, but it felt like it was like a one-day buzz and it kind of just went away. So maybe people don't like blowouts as much as you and I do. So
maybe they don't. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's just, you know, the conspiracy against John Conkar to get the attention that he deserves.
Now you're onto something. Now you're thinking, now we're on the same. That's what I wanted us to get to is discussing this John Conkar erasure that's trying to happen in the NBA. But
thanks for leading me there. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about some other blowouts here. So 1992, we're going to go here. Cleveland Cavaliers, Miami Heat was a 68-point blowout here. This is on December 17th, 1991. Something about December. Maybe people got Christmas on their mind or something.
Right.
They're like, oh, did I get those gifts? Or who really cares anymore? You know, what type of thing's happening? But neither team is really bad. And in fact, both teams are kind of okay at this point. The Heat are 11-12. The Cavs are 13-8. The Cavs would obviously end up the season, if you know the 1992 Cavs. Like, that was one of the best, potentially the last, the last breath of air for that Cavs late 80s, early 90s Cavs. They went 57-25, did a decent run in the playoffs, and then obviously met the Chicago Bulls, and that ended up not going very well. We've talked about them pretty recently in our we talked about game winners and all that sort of stuff and playoff blowouts or playoff disappointments, and that one's in there. The Heat, they were 38-44, and they would actually make the playoffs at 38-44 for an early franchise. Pretty good to do that. You know, obviously not above 500, but making the playoffs, you know, doesn't matter. You're in the playoffs no matter what. But what's interesting about this one, too, so it's a 68-point blowout. The week before, the Heat beat the Cavs 105-103. So it's like right. this. Yeah. It's not like these teams were ill-matched or whatever. It just sure. kind of happened. And what's even more fascinating, too, is for some reason this game just wasn't televised in either Cleveland or Miami. Neither market picked the game up. Just yeah. didn't occur. So nobody really has a lot of footage on this game. You see like little bits and stuff here, I guess, from like news broadcasts or whoever was there to film it. But yeah, it yeah. never aired on television. So speaking of erasure, this one's very tough to find. But
yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I know that it wasn't, I don't know if that was still pretty common at this point. I mean, I know that, yeah, this is before, you know, obviously, you know, every game is going to be televised all the time. I mean, that probably didn't happen for another few years, but yeah, it is, it's an odd one to not have anything on or very little on.
So he actually kept the game close-ish going into halftime, but what really happens here is in the third quarter, Kevin Lockery, who's the coach of the Miami Heat, and I think noted red ass, right? I think we could call Kevin Lockery a noted red ass.
I would say, especially at this point, yeah.
Yes, right. Yeah, at this point, he's just had enough. He wants everybody to get off his lawn. And he decides to make a statement. So he benches the starters, Ronnie Cicely, Grant Long, Willie Burton, Glenn Rice, and Steve Smith. He says, quote, "I told them at halftime that they have 3 to 4 minutes in the second half to try to get it together, and they just couldn't get in sync." So he was a man of his word, because 3 minutes in, he said, "Get the hell out of here. You're gone." And the men who enter in their place, not exactly a murderer's row here, Alan Ogg.
Oh, Ogg.
Which sounds like an eggnog, like, tie-in. Yeah. Like, that doesn't sound like a real person. Alec Kessler, Keith Askins, Bimbo Coles, and Kevin Edwards enter the game.
Right.
What happens next is a 75-27 second-half destruction from the Cavaliers. So even with the Cavaliers trying to take it easy in the fourth quarter, understanding, oh, well, this thing's way out of hand, well, let's rest, they still dominate with a 42-13 fourth quarter margin. So this is just insane. At this point, though, Lockery doesn't want to put his starters back in the game, because he has the idea of, okay, well, now we're getting our doors blown off. Do I really want Ronnie Cicely or Glenn Rice or Steve Smith to, like, get hurt or whatever? So he doesn't put those guys back in. But what happens is Bimbo Coles fouls out, and then Kevin Edwards, who he had taken out of the game and had to put back in, he gets back in, winds up injuring his knee. Nothing serious. I think he was able to come back a few days later, but like it got real bad. So the guys were fouling out. He didn't want to put his starters back in. He kind of worked himself into a shoot here, where he's just kind of screwed on what to do. But the blowout reached its highest point with just under a minute to play when Danny Ferry hit a 3-pointer for the Cavs to increase their lead to 73 points, 148-75. Kevin Lockery, after the game, says, "I didn't know that was the worst until we walked off the floor. I guess no one's done this before. I thought it would have been more than this. It happens." So that's a great quote from Kevin Lockery. Yeah. Like, really? Nobody else that much? No, this is an all-time. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, this is the all-time. He's like, oh, all right, well, shit.
Yeah, my bad.
Glenn Rice says, "By the end, you didn't need to figure anything out. It was as clear as day. We got whipped." So, yeah, 8 Cavaliers scored in double figures, led by 18 for Mark Price and John Battle. Brad Doherty and Henry James had 17. Here's what we're talking, like, the starters all do well. They all come out, and then these other dudes come in, and they do just as well. So, like, Henry Battle, Brad Doherty, Mark Price, John Battle. Hot Rod Williams, he has 16 points. Winston Bennett, Danny Ferry, and Jimmy Oliver all have 11. Larry Nance just missed out on the fun. He only had 9 points. Terrell Brandon, young Terrell Brandon, had 8 points. Yeah. Craig Elo had 7. Steve Kerr had 5. Every Cav that touched the floor scored. The Heat, they had 23 turnovers in this game. They shot 35.5% from the field. Not ideal. The Cavs, they couldn't miss. They hit 57.3% from the field, including 6 of 11 from 3. And the Cavaliers 148 was a franchise record for a regulation game. So there you go. Cavaliers Heat 1992. All-time record until just a couple weeks ago.
I know. I had never really known the story behind that. Yeah, Kevin Lockery, he's in his 6th job as NBA coach, probably. He's just ready to be done. You know, he has a few more years with the Heat. He's grumpy. He's in his 50s. He's ready to be done with this stuff. You know, I mean, you figure you bring in Alan Ogg that you're going to do really well. But, Alan Ogg, a 7'2 center. He was actually born in the same county that I grew up in. He was born in Fairfield County, Ohio.
Look at that. So we got John Concar and Alan Ogg.
Our heroes. He went to high school in Alabama and college at UAB. But, yes, he had a short NBA career, but Alan Ogg, it's up there in terms of the great last names
for sure. Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's and like we said, Kevin Lockery, I mean, he's about at the end of his road here. 1994, right. he would call it quits, but you know, he coached Michael Jordan for a little bit, so I'm sure every time he turns on the TV and he's like, be like Mike commercials, he's like, damn it. You know, because I think he did not I think he liked him. I think Jordan liked Lockery, though, if I remember correctly, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. But I think he let he let Jordan do whatever he wanted, and the Bulls were like, all right, hold on. Like, right. He can't just do everything that he wants. So
yeah. Well, when Lockery was there the first year, right? And then new Krause comes in and kind of cleans house, and then they get Stan Albeck, and he doesn't like Stan Albeck, and then they end up with Doug Collins.
Right, right. I think that's how it all played out. So I guess I guess he's maybe still a little upset, a little bitter that he doesn't get to coach the Bulls to their glory.
I can see that, yeah.
All right, so let's get to 1998 here.
Let's do it.
February 27th, 1998, Indiana Pacers, Portland Trailblazers. Let me tell you, my 11th birthday cake wasn't the only thing getting blown out on this day, because also the Portland Trailblazers were getting blown out as I was celebrating my birthday, probably playing N64 or watching wrestling.
Sure.
Pretty much the same stuff I do today, even though I'm 35. So anyway.
It's all right.
Besides that point, I have a wife now, so you know what? Hey, I have a house. Yeah. I have a mortgage and a wife, so shut up.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's working today, so I'm definitely going to play some N64 later. So,
all right, nice.
Anyway, and probably watch some wrestling. Indiana Pacers, 124. Portland Trailblazers, 59. A nice little birthday present for me, a young, I wasn't really a Pacers fan, but hey, you know what? They are 39-17 at this time. They would go on to be 58-24 this year. The Blazers, they were 33-23. They would end up 46-36. This is a great Pacers year, by the way. This is the one where they very nearly beat the Bulls to go to the finals, which would have been just the most. Can you imagine the gut punch of that? Like, the Last Dance probably doesn't exist if it's like, well, and then the Pacers beat us in 7 games. So, and that was it. Michael Jordan retired, and that was kind of how it all ended. So how do you stop Jalen Rose? It's impossible.
Yeah. No, that would, that would be different. I mean, there would still be the legend, but it would definitely have a little bit less of,
Not doing the 2 3-peats. Not doing the repeat 3-peats. Oh, God. Right. Damn it. We own Pat Riley money now. Shit. I'll pay him. I got his PayPal saved and stuff, so it's fine.
All right, that's good. That's important.
It's kind of amazing how much narrative would have changed if the Pacers had beaten the Bulls and went to the finals, but it didn't happen, so there's no point rewriting history. All right, so yes, this is my birthday. I'm excited. I'm probably sitting down watching some Pacers Blazers on the TNT or something. I don't know. Anyway, for the first time in the NBA's 51-year history, one team scored more than twice as many points as the other. So previously, the closest the team had come to doubling its opponent's win totals was in 1951, just before the introduction of the 24-second clock. Minneapolis Lakers defeated the Milwaukee Hawks 99-51, so very, very close. And so you might think, man, 59 points, that's got to be real bad. And it is, but it's not historically bad, believe it or not. 343 times in NBA history, a team has failed to score at least 59 points. Now, a lot of those are come with some caveats. Like, the most ridiculous one of all time, the lowest ever, is 18 points. But that was by the Minneapolis Lakers in November of 1950. It's a different game completely. Right. It's essentially not even the same game. And the reason why I can tell you it's not the same game is because guess who has the second lowest scoring total of all time? It is the Fort Wayne Pistons. Guess who they faced on this same game? Yes, the score was 19-18 in the finals. So, and there's a lot of sub-50-point games in the 40s and the 50s or whatever. If you just go to the shot clock era, there are only 26 games with lower point totals than this. So it becomes a little bit more rare in the shot clock era, getting under 59 points, with the all-time worst still being a 49-point performance in April of 1999 by the absolutely atrocious Chicago Bulls, who lost 82-49. 90s basketball, bring it back, is what I say.
Yeah. Hey, bring it back. Yeah.
That's when the NBA was great, when the Bulls scored 49 points and lost 82-49. Just get into it, yeah.
Bring back Tim Floyd, that's what I said.
You know what? Yes. Not for the Bulls, for some other team, because I don't really want Tim Floyd back. But give me Marcus Fizer, bring back Tim Floyd.
Absolutely.
Let's do it all over again. But it's hard to see exactly what happened in this game. This was just kind of an old-school blowout, and it just didn't get any better. Pacers jump out to a 33-14 first quarter lead. They go up to the half, 59-29. They lead the third quarter 25-14. Then just went wild in the fourth. They put up 40 points to Portland 16. So I don't know if they were just like, screw these guys. Let's see what we can do here. But Indiana basically just couldn't miss. They shot 68.2% from the field in the first quarter. Rick Smits got 8 points to start us off. Chris Mullin got 8 points. Mark Jackson scored 7. Portland only got 14 points, as we said, in that first quarter. They got 5 from Isaiah Ryder and Walt Williams, 4 from Rasheed Wallace. And then the fourth quarter saw Reggie Miller and Chris Mullin only play 2 minutes. So they pretty much didn't. It wasn't like they had those guys out there just kind of pouring it on. They emptied their bench. It didn't matter, though. Travis Best got 6 points. Austin Crozier had 8 points in just under 7 minutes. 8 points in 7 minutes for Austin Crozier. Mark West scores 5 points in 6 minutes. Fred Hoiberg pours in 5 of his own. They just couldn't stop making points. And Portland also gave up in the fourth quarter too, which probably led to some of the issues as well. Isaiah Rutter and Rasheed Wallace, they only play a minute. The bench just couldn't score. Other than Walt Williams, who got 8 points, pretty much nobody else could do anything. In the end, Portland shoots 33% from the field. 3 of 17 from three, whereas Indiana, they were 63.6 from the field and 9 of 13 from the three. So there's not really a Kevin Lockery benches all the starters to make a point and then they get destroyed sure. game. It's just like they didn't make any shots and Indiana made all their shots and then it happened. So there's not really a big like narrative around this game. It just sort of happened.
Yeah, pretty much everybody for the Blazers except for Rasheed and Walt Williams were awful here. And Brian Grant's 0-for-6. Stacey Ogman's 1-for-7. Pretty much all around. Damon Stoudemire's 3-for-10. Isaiah Rutter's 5-for-15. So, yeah, just not an overriding storyline. Just hey, Portland sucked, and Indiana just was really good.
Yeah, there's no like globalization you can make with this one either, because it's like right. Portland would end up going and being good for the next like 4 or 5 years or whatever. So
right.
It's not like oh, this team's like falling apart and it's going to be a mess. Because you could almost buy if this was like that last year of the Blazers when everybody was sure. hating each other and everybody was getting yeah. arrested and everything was just a disaster. You could be like, well, yeah, I mean, it signified the end of the Portland. No, this is like. We got screwed. We lost a lot. Whatever. We'll be good next year. They make a deep playoff runs over the next 3 years. So
yeah, I don't know exactly when the Jailblazers name took when that really became the dominant narrative there. I think this is around. I mean, there's certainly those guys are there. I don't remember if that was really.
I would say probably at 01, I think is when it sort of happened. So I'm reading a book about it right now, and it's kind of like it's like the 01 era because even. Even when they were making their deep runs against the Lakers, like the 2000 and really some of the 2001 runs, it wasn't that bad. Like they were kind of more like they were bad boys, but it wasn't until like you had your Quintel Woods and your guys like that were getting in some real issues. I think so. It was like 01, 02, I think is when it really, really started to take on that narrative. So
yeah, that makes sense. We're going to go back to 1972, a 63-point margin, the Lakers beating the Warriors 162-99. This did set a new record at the time for the largest margin of victory. This is the records at the time. The Lakers were 66-12. This was their 69-win season. The Warriors were 49-30. They would end up winning 51 games, obviously, given the records this is late in the season. And this is, of course, the year, we talked about it again recently. We've talked about it many times. The Lakers won 33 straight games. Elgin Baylor retires early in the year. New coach Bill Sharman has the old Lakers, Jerry West, Will Chamberlain, and Gil Goodrich being the top stars, playing the running game to an extreme amount of success. This game, of course, being near the end of the season, was not a part of that streak, but it was the seventh win in an eight-game streak. The Lakers, during this little eight-game streak, also had wins of 39 points and 34 points, so they were very dominant during this stretch, as they were for most of the season. So for the Warriors, this is the year before they got Rick Barry back from the ABA. They were a good team, obviously 51 wins. They had Nate Thurmond, they had Jeff Mullins, they had gotten Cassie Russell from the Knicks, who was acquired for Jerry Lucas. They had a 10-game improvement from the last season. Something interesting, they had very unusually good health. Their top seven players all played 78 games or more. I've never really taken note, I guess, of that to see like how that ranks in NBA history. I'm not even sure there's a way to be able to quantify that. But that
that'd be interesting. And especially in like modern era, it'd be real tough to find that out. Cause like there's no chance that like, most times you're not going to let all of your stars play, 72 plus games. In a year. I mean, maybe, I guess if Kevin Durant and Kevin Nash
or Steve 70, Nash are running it. But, 75 maybe, but 70 is a lot. Yeah, it's just interesting. Yes, all seven players.
That's crazy. That's awesome. Yeah. I wonder. That'd be a very interesting thing to research, but I don't know if anybody could do that. Maybe a little bit of work. We'll put that in the notes and see if we can do that, but that'd be fun.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, well, unfortunately, the Warriors probably wish their starters could have missed this one because, Russell shot 5-for-16, Thurman was 4-of-18, and Clyde Lee was 2-for-8. Their bench, not particularly helpful. Bill Turner, 1-for-7, Nick Jones, 4-for-12, Ron Williams, 3-for-10, and Otis Allison, 2-for-8. Overall, the Warriors shot 34% from the floor, were out-rebounded 73-54. On Lakers' side, almost everyone got into the act. Goodrich led all scorers with 30 points. Jim McMillan had 22. Happy Harrison had 16 points and 20 rebounds. And Leroy Ellis had 16 points and 15 rebounds off the bench. Again, I tried to look here if there was any real story behind this one. Doesn't really seem like there was, the Warriors, their guys played a normal amount of minutes, you know, in a blowout. They all played, you know, up to the high 20s. Obviously, at some point, they basically conceded the game and went to their bench. But there was no, you know, overriding reason why this happened. Obviously, the Lakers were historically great, but the Warriors were really good, too. Just kind of one of those things. There was another, if you look in the head-to-head for the season, there was another game earlier on in the season. I believe it was during the streak where the Lakers beat the Warriors by like 30. So they did kind of have the Warriors' number over the season, but they had pretty much everybody's number, as you know. And interestingly enough, a year later, the Lakers would have a 56-point win over the Warriors. This one would actually happen in Golden State. This game here was in L.A. That was in the playoffs. Rick Barry did play in that one. He went 4 of 18 from the floor with the Warriors shooting 23% in that game. So that's the Lakers just like destroying the Warriors for some reason. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, something personal, I guess. But, those are fun teams too. That's a lot of really cool names. That's a game that, like, again, like, you know, similar to, my Warriors Bulls game where, you know, if you're attending that game live, you're like, all right, here we go. We got the Lakers, right. The Warriors, like two great teams. Right. And you leave being like, what the hell was that? It's like, come on. Or you leave being like, oh my God, the Lakers are like the greatest team ever. And you know, they're pretty good. So not wrong. So
most of these are, of course, you know, occur with the home team. We haven't noted it specifically. Once we get to the point where it's the road team, what's happening to the road team. But yeah, in all cases we've discussed so far, it is the home team who has the advantage here. Because obviously the dynamic of a home team winning by 60 and a road team winning by 60, it's very different when you're in the building.
Sure.
But a couple more that we're going to just talk about briefly before we get to the next one that is in depth. The next one, 1992 season, Golden State Warriors 153, Sacramento Kings 91. We'll talk a little bit more about this with some other Sacramento Kings news. This is actually game two of the season, which I think is the earliest that we see of any of these. The Warriors go 2-0. The Kings go 1-1. The Kings were a 29-win team. The Warriors were a 55-win team. And I would say this would be best known as the Victor Alexander game for the Warriors. As Victor Alexander, 28 points, 16 rebound, 4 steals, 10 of 13 from the floor. Definitely has a excellent game. We'll have to look this up. Is this the first game between the two teams after the Mitch Richmond trade?
Ooh, let me, I can maybe find that out real quickly there.
Might be.
I'm usually on Mitch Richmond's basketball reference page, but this time I'll have to, usually it's my favorite when I open my computer, it comes up right away, but I'll have to search for it real quick. That was November 1st, 1991, so.
Yeah. No, actually, wait a minute. Richmond is not yet on the, Richmond is not yet on the. Okay, Richmond was on the 91 Warriors, and was he on the 92 Warriors? No, they'd already done the trade, but Richmond, for some reason, didn't actually play in this game. Maybe he was hurt, or maybe I don't know if there were any contract issues when the trade happened or what have you. Maybe he didn't want to play in Sacramento at first, but yes, he was not. He did not play in this game, which probably has a little bit to do with why the Warriors blow the Kings. Because without Mitch Richmond, the Kings stink, as we will see in other instances during this period. In the interest of time, just going to talk about that one briefly. Another one we're going to talk about briefly, another 62.1, Syracuse Nationals 162, New York Knicks 100. This happens in the 1961 season. It actually happens Christmas Day 1960. The Nationals are 13-15 at the time. They would finish with 38 wins. The Knicks are 9-23, finish with 21 wins. This would be the first 60-plus point blowout in NBA history. The first above 50 in the regular season, and we'll talk about the one in the playoffs a bit later, set a record that would last until 1972. 9 of the 10 Nationals finished with double figures, with Hal Greer and Dave Gamby leading the way with 24 each. A 7'3" Swede Hallbrook only had 9 points, but he did have 13 rebounds. Only national not to score in double figures the entire time. And unfortunately, we don't have field goal percentage totals here, so we can't really tell which Nick really stunk the most to make this not work. But when you have Hall of Fame pitcher Jim Palmer as your one of your leading scorers, you probably a good indication that
things aren't going well. That's a joke, obviously, if people don't know. Right. I think 12 years old at this point. That might have been the problem.
I'm pretty sure I've made that joke before.
So, have you? Okay, just to make sure, in case somebody doesn't say, oh, these guys are like, I heard that was Jim Palmer, but I looked it up, and Jim Palmer never played NBA. But he was following in Dave DeBuscher's footsteps. That timeline doesn't match up at all. Anyway.
Hey, it's all right.
61 points here, 2018. Charlotte Hornets, Memphis Grizzlies, 140-79. And my, how the fates of these two franchises have changed in just a few years for both these. So the Grizzlies at this point are 19-53. The Hornets are 32-41. Grizzlies would end the season 22-60. The Hornets would end the season 36-46. This is in March 22nd of 2018. By the way, so this one has a bit of an asterisk here, as neither Mike Conley nor Marc Gasol are playing for the Grizzlies, which put them at a huge disadvantage right away, and it plays out that way for sure. Charlotte's largest previous win in franchise history came by 52 points, 136-84 at home against Philadelphia on February 27th, 1992. So a lot of blowouts on my birthday, man. It is something about my birthday. So circle that on the calendar here this year. Don't go to a game, because there's a 50% chance that it's going to be a blowout. Yeah. So don't just in case. And it might be for your team, but it might not.
So. You probably just want to stay home and just get your cake and celebrate Rich's birthday. Yeah,
on your own time. Yeah, exactly. Get your own cake. Yeah. Right. And blow out the can. Yeah, do all that stuff. So what is key, though, is the Hornets were also missing one of their key players. Yes, this is during the Dwight Howard. Charlotte Hornets era. You forgot about that, didn't you? You're thinking Dwight Howard, Charlotte Hornet. Yep, it was a thing.
Yeah.
It was a thing. But I'm going to actually go on the theory that Dwight not being there is what helped the Hornets win this game. Because one day without fart jokes probably goes a long way, where he's like not on the team bus and he's not in the hotel, and you're just like, oh my God. Like,
he was suspended for this game.
He was, yes. Because he had the day before, he had received his 16th technical foul. So he was out. What, to be fair to Dwight Howard, the night prior, he had a 32-30 rebound game. So, all joking aside, he is still, obviously quite productive.
Can play well, yeah.
Yes. But he's, God, he just makes too many fart jokes for anybody to handle. He's Dwight Howard. Like, God, anyway.
Yeah.
Kemba Walker on fire all game. He scored 17 in the first, 18 in the second, 11 in the third. The Hornets roared ahead 12-2 in the first 4.5 minutes of the game. We're ahead 37-14 after one quarter, 75-42 at halftime, and then by a game-high 65 points with a minute 45 left in the game before taking the eventual 61-point win. Kemba Walker says, that's not something you see every day. We played well. We knew these guys were shorthanded with no Mike Conley and no Marc Gasol, who are two awesome players, but we just handled our business. And Memphis is led in scoring by Wayne Selden, which is not good. Wayne Selden is your leading scorer, he has 18. Tyreke Evans, you remember the Tyreke Evans Grizzlies era? I don't, because he had 16 points. Yeah, that also not good. And then Jarrell Martin had 12, so those are not good. Tyreke Evans says, they were out there just laughing. It was embarrassing, the whole thing. We've just got to wash this one away and just come back next game and be ready to play. So Memphis shot 38.5% from the field, 4 of 18 from 3. Charlotte, on the other hand, hit 19 threes, so they made more than Memphis took, and they shot 53% from the field overall. So,
speaking of Wayne Selden, there are, I believe, it looks like from a cursory basketball reference search, there are 10 Waynes who have played in the NBA all time. So, Wayne Ellington, of course, being one of the current ones. Yeah,
I was going to say not a lot of current ones, but there is a pretty decent amount of current.
It's a high percentage of the overall Waynes in history. Wayne Embry obviously being the best Wayne to have ever played in the NBA, we would say. So, and there's a Wayne C. So we'll have to weigh and see at some point whether we can get any whether we'll get some information about Wayne C. But anyway, yes. Anything more on this game, Rich?
No.
All right. I'm sorry to derail things. My apologies. Anyway, another brief look we're going to get is a 59-point win. The Warriors 153 over the Pacers 91. This is a 1977, March 19th, to be exact. At the time, the Pacers have 31-40, the Warriors 40-31, and they would also end up with the exact opposite records in the season. The Warriors 46-36, the Pacers 36-46. So how nice. So yeah, this is the Pacers' first year in the NBA. They of course come over from the ABA, and I mean, the biggest difference here really rebounding. The Warriors had 71 rebounds, including 30 offensive rebounds, and the Pacers had 45 total. So that's a big difference. And the Warriors managed to dominate this game, despite the fact that Phil Smith went 1 of 8 from the floor for the Warriors. So the only Pacer who really did worse was Don Busey, who went 0 for 7. So yeah, I mean, this is just a, I would say, yeah, you look on paper and you're like, oh, the numbers for the Pacers don't like seem that terrible. How do they lose by that many? But this is, I think, another one where just the Warriors, probably not a whole lot of defensive resistance from the Pacers to the Warriors in this one. And that's, you know,
doesn't seem that way. Yeah. When you put up 153, yeah, you're kind of let go. Yeah. It's a weird game because the Pacers are decent at this time. And that's always the ones that are a little surprising. And when they're decent and they're not missing a ton of players, it's kind of like that Portland Trailblazers game where it's just like, sometimes it just happens. And it gets away from you. And then it just kind of snowballs from there. And then, you end up with this game.
Yeah. Next, we have another 59-point, the Milwaukee Bucks 143, Detroit Pistons 84. This is from December 26, 1978, so the day after Christmas. Records at the time, the Pistons are 11-22. They would end up as a 30-win team. The Bucks are 15-22, and they would end up as a 38-win team. So Bucks at this point, in the 1979 season, they're still kind of trying to, you know, build a new powerhouse in the post-Kareem era. Actually, the prior season, they made a bit of a surprise playoff run. They had pretty much the same roster plus Alex English, who they lost in free agency. So, but they had Marcus Johnson, they had, you know, Kent Benson, who had been the number one overall pick. Both of them in their second seasons, they also had, you know, Brian Winters, Quinn Buckner, Ernie Grunfeld, and Junior Bridgman. So, good roster of names and, a mix of like solid stars and good complimentary players. So they weren't there yet, but they were going to get there soon. They would, be really a great team for, starting the next season and throughout most of the 80s. The standout here in this game is Kevin Rastani, who I have to admit I'm not too super familiar with. He actually was newly returned to the Bucks after he'd had a brief stint in Kansas City the year before. He, in this game, 22 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 blocks. Off the bench, Grunfeld, 27 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 3 steals. Bridgman, 24 points and 6 rebounds. Norm Van Leer, the only Buck who I had completely forgotten or never knew that he had a stint with the Bucks at the end of his career. This was his last season. Only Buck who did not score during the game. So the Bucks, they had 53 assists in this game, including Lloyd Walton, also not heard of, I'm assuming not related to Bill, 9 assists and 17 points, 17 minutes off the bench, and there's a New York Times article from the time that indicates that the Bucks 19 assists broke the previous NBA record in the second quarter. In any quarter, they broke the previous NBA record there by 3. The previous record had 16, and their 30 assists in the first half set another NBA record. So I did not check to see what the assist records in this game, because that's even what they are today, because I think that's even, obscure by our standards. But if anyone wants to know, we will look it up and try to find out for you. So Pistons, on the other hand, only got 13 minutes from Bob Lanier. He had 2 points, 1 rebound, and 1 block, was 1 for 4 from the floor. Not really sure if it was injury related, which would be common for him, although he did not miss really any games during this period. So didn't foul out, doesn't seem to have been ejected. So not clear what happened there. Maybe just had a nagging injury that pulled him out for the game, but didn't last. It looks like, in offense at least, the Pistons were more just bad rather than awful. I mean, they shot, 41% from the floor, which, isn't exactly terrible. They didn't really have anybody who, dragged them down, to, horrible depths or anything. I mean, Leon Douglas was 1 for 6 from the floor. That was really the only, player who shot awful, though, he had 10 rebounds and 5 assists. Ben Paquette off the bench had 1 of 8 shooting. Those guys really the only stinkers for them. But Yeah, it just seems like probably the not a lot of defensive resistance, I'm guessing, for the Bucks, who, you know, shot 60% from the floor, you know, 54 rebounds, 53 assists, 17 steals, you know, just I think they just were, you know, just were hot. Interestingly enough, the Bucks had a 56-point win against the Jazz on the same season. That would happen on March 14th, 1979. So, the Bucks only won 38 games this season, as we mentioned. They had an expected win-loss of 47 wins, according to their net rating. So these two wins gave the Bucks 1.4 points out of their 2.1 net rating for the season. So basically, two-thirds of their net rating came from, you know, these two games. So
yeah, definitely. This is an interesting one that shows that, you know, the expected win-loss, not always a great stat here, because, yeah, this is a team that probably was not worthy of 47 wins, but had two gigantic wins that made their net rating look pretty incredible. So yeah, it's pretty fascinating. Right. This is, again, this is not normal. Like, it's still largely a pretty good stat, but it is a case where it does show you that sometimes it can be a little misleading, especially with this Bucks. Yeah, it's fascinating. They just have two insane games, but then still only win 30. It's like,
yeah,
let's do what you did the else games. Do that again. Right. A lot of times.
Now,
they just couldn't.
Now, you could say that, you know, in some cases, the net rating actually, you know, was a good indicator because of how good they were the next year with, you know, pretty much the same roster.
Sure,
too.
Right.
Yeah, so it's sort of like, you know, and they would actually get Bob Lanier the next year, although, you know, not till I think late in the season. So, but they had, you know, largely the same roster outside of that. They did get Cindy Moncrief, so that's a pretty big improvement. But anyway, so maybe the fact that, on one hand, it's, maybe those two blowouts were like an indication of how they could be. And then that, you know, again, kind of reflected in the next season, but
for sure. Yeah.
Discussion. But so another one, 1956 playoffs. This is Minneapolis Lakers 133, St. Louis Hawks 75. This did set the record for either playoff or regular season. It was the first 50 plus point blowout in NBA history. It happened to be in the playoffs. The records, both teams were 33-39. The Lakers actually beat the Hawks in a one game tiebreaker before this series to determine who would get home court advantage. The Hawks had home court for game one and the Lakers got it for games two and three. So the Lakers were down 1-0 facing elimination after a 1-point loss in St. Louis. And yes, 10 Lakers here scored in double figures, led by Slater Martin with 19. It was truly a balanced effort of, you know, all these guys having between 19 and 10 points. George Mikan, having returned from retirement, had 43 points. The Lakers only shot 44% from the floor, which, you know, is not exceptional. Of course, the field goal standards were different. It's not bad, but it's still not great, you know, even for the time. But the Hawks, they shot 24% from the floor.
No, that's not good in any era. Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah. Bob Pettit, 14 points on 4 of 15 shooting. He was 27% from the floor. So he actually beat his team's total of 22 out of 91, 24%. The only other Hawk in double figures, Jack Stevens at 3 of 6 from the floor. He was the only Hawk to break 50%. Al Ferrari here, more like a Pinto, going 1 for 6. Bob Schaefer, he's one of 3 Bobs on this team, went 1 for 10. And Med Park and Chuck Scheer went 2 for 10. So, but the Hawks, they would regroup from this. They would win game 3 in Minnesota and the series. I feel like I said Minnesota when I.
You did. Nice. really channeling your Minnesota there. I like it.
Not even intended. Wow. 116 to 115, the same scores in game 1. They would end up one game shy of the NBA Finals, falling to the Fort Wayne Pistons in a 5-game series, which was, you know, the 3-2 losing in that series. So of course the Hawks would go on to kind of be a juggernaut over the next few seasons. They would go to the finals in 4 out of 5 seasons and win the title in 58. So this was kind of a precursor to that.
I think we should also do a series of shows on Bobs and teams with Bobs and how well team with three Bobs or more handles their business. So
I've got the title. What about Bob?
Yeah, exactly. So I put that one in the to-do list there. Right. But I like that. You know, how do Bobs? I guess we could apply Roberts to that as well. I think I think in the spirit it should just be Bobs. Sure. But you know. We'll see what ends up happening.
I do feel like really it's got to be Bob's.
Robert is a different. There's a different vibe if you're a Robert than if you're a Bob. There's just there's a different aura about you, as a Bob. So yeah,
I agree that I think it really just has. We have to isolate the Bobs. We can't really include Roberts. I think it's a whole thing. And no Robbies. You know, no. Can we have Bobbies? I don't even know. Like, I feel like.
Ooh, I think a Bobby isn't a Bob. It's not a Bob.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just not. Yeah.
I think a Bobby and a Bob are a completely different vibe. Yeah, absolutely. It's such a.
Like, Bobby Bonilla is cool as hell, right. But like, you know.
Right.
Bob Schaefer, you know, he's not Bobby Bonilla. I'll tell you that. So.
Right. Obviously, it's like Richard. You know, there's so many ways you can go with Richard, too.
Right. Like, Bobby Jackson, cool. Bob Schaefer, still not cool.
Yeah, not cool. No, it's weird. Yeah, but Bobby Brady, not cool. I mean, you have to have the right Bobby, too. Oh, you know?
Man, you're right.
It's tough out there. You can't do much with Jason. You can do Jay. That's pretty much it. So, you know, Jason, not a flexible name.
No. Yeah, I unfortunately have one of the most flexible names, but most of the flexibility of it is ridiculous. It makes no sense. So.
Not great, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Why Richard is Dick? I don't know, but hey, it is.
I don't know. Let's go with that. Yeah, so, yes. So, another game we're going to touch on very briefly, the 1986 season, Milwaukee Bucks 140, Sacramento Kings 82. This happened December 15th, 1985. Yeah, a lot of these happening December. That is kind of interesting. The Kings here, I believe it's their first season in Sacramento. They're 8-17. They would win 37 over the season. The Bucks 18-10. 57 wins for the season. Yeah, I remember when I said that the beginning of right before the Bucks were going to be great. Well, this is right toward the end of when the Bucks that were great. Yeah, you know, this was just pretty much a clunker from everybody. You know, Reggie Theus shooting 7 of 15 from three, which I guess isn't really that bad for 18 points. Terry Tyler off the bench shooting 5 of 14 for the Kings, and yeah, just. You know, pretty much everybody is smoking for the Bucks. Terry Cummins with 21 points, Craig Hodges with 15, and then the Bucks had five guys with double figures off of the bench, including Rick Pierce and Jerry Reynolds and Charles Davis. So, just kind of a not much of a story there, but. Wanted to mention that one, but I think you got a really interesting one coming up.
Yeah, let's do this one. So this is another playoff game here. It's the 2009 playoffs, April 27th, 2009. Denver Nuggets, 121. New Orleans Hornets, 63. So this tied
a record. Wait a minute. New Orleans Hornets?
They at some point were the New Orleans Hornets, yes. Oh. And that's not the same as the Charlotte Hornets anymore.
Okay.
It's the same as New Orleans Pelicans, I think, and yes, it makes all the sense in the world.
But as we know, the Charlotte has always been the Hornets in Charlotte. So I don't know what other team. It's weird that the NBA had two Hornets. But anyway, well,
it's very not confusing at all. So I don't know why you're having trouble with this. It's very not confusing.
Okay.
Anyway, this tied a record for biggest playoff blowout. And set a record for the biggest blowouts with home team losing. This is what we talked about a little bit earlier, where we sort of alluded to there's going to be a blowout where the home team is going to get destroyed, and this is the one here. Previously, the 1973 Lakers 56-point win over the Warriors was the one before that. And this is oddly a very strange series because three of the top four playoff blowouts had the road team winning in this one. 11 of the 48, 50-plus blowouts had the road team winning, and then you have this one here where the home team loses by so much here. This is game four of the 2009 Western Conference first round. The Nuggets are up 3-1. They would win the series eventually in five games. And pretty much a dominating performance from beginning to end with them. David West scored the game's opening points. Kenyon Martin dunked on the other end. And then from that point forward, they went on a 27-6 run. So it did not go very well for the Hornets. The Denver shot 70% in the first quarter, which is pretty good. That's what you want. 70% from the field is good. They take a 36-15 lead on DeJounte Jones's three-pointer. And then the Hornets went 7 minutes and 48 seconds without a field goal in the second quarter. Carmelo scored 26 points total, but did not play at all in the fourth quarter. Chris Paul had one of the most horrific games of his entire career. 4 points and 6 assists. It would be the first time Paul, again, who did not play in the fourth quarter, scored fewer than 14 points in a playoff game as well. So 4 points and 6 assists, not great from Chris Paul. And I looked it up, only 6 times in his career, playoffs and regular season, did Chris Paul have a line this bad. Obviously, this one hurts a little bit more because it happens in the playoffs and a kind of a key pivotal time in a playoff series as well. The Hornets recorded playoff lows in field goals made with 17, field goals attempted with 54, assists with 10, and second half points with 24. They had 10 assists in the entire game. Like, that is mind-boggling when Chris Paul's on your team. And he had six of them. Like,
yeah.
Man, not good. The fourth quarter saw absolutely no starters play. That, imagine getting a ticket to this game. You're like, playoff basketball in New Orleans, let's go.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
No starter plays in the fourth, your team loses by this much. It would be awful. But Carmelo Anthony would say after the game, "I wouldn't have thought we would win by 58 points. I never thought anybody could win by 58 points in the playoffs." So that's and he's kind of right. So the Hornets' previous worst playoff loss was 32 points, 96-64, when they lost to Atlanta in 1998, when the team was still in Charlotte. And Denver's previous largest playoff margin was 30, when they won 141-111 over San Antonio in 1985. So definitely a weird one. Definitely a strange one here for New Orleans and Denver, but yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if this was the first time they had made the playoffs in New Orleans, but actually, no, they made it right after the move I forgot about during the Baron Davis era. So that was but this is obviously the first one with Chris Paul, and there were some pretty high expectations there. So that was a tough one. Yeah, this was kind of a underrated great Nuggets team. They ended up losing in the Western Conference Final to the Lakers that year, but that was a tough team, probably the best team that Carmelo ever played on in retrospect.
Oh, so. Yeah, that was the team where it really felt like, okay, they've righted the ship. They got it figured out. They're going some places. Yeah. They're doing some things. And then obviously, Carmelo being Carmelo, George Karl being George Karl.
Yeah.
A lot of things happened.
And,
some things happened.
And, interesting. Yeah.
It was an untenable relationship between the two. And then it became very, exactly as everybody thought, very untenable.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, at this time it really felt like, okay, if this was going to be the team that was going to do it, they had stability. You had Kenny Martin playing it at his pretty good powers, Billups playing his pretty good powers. It felt like, okay, this might be the one, and it ended up not quite happening that way. And this would kind of be the, I don't want to say the beginning of the end for Chris Paul and the Hornets, because obviously he would stick around for a couple more years and they would make the playoffs a couple years later. But they went to the conference semifinals the year prior, as you mentioned, with kind of a surprising win. And then the next year, Byron Scott is out and
okay, yeah.
And then a couple years later, Paul's going to be out as well. So, yeah, it's not the last breath of air, because this Hornets never really had that much air, but it was certainly the beginning of the end for the Chris Paul New Orleans Hornets era, and really the New Orleans Hornets era in general.
Yeah, exactly. So we got one more. We are going to also 58-point margin. Sacramento Kings, 139. Dallas Mavericks, 81. This December 29th, 1992. Yeah, wow. How many of these are in December? You have to. Do you mind counting that while?
Yeah, let me do that while we're figuring this out, because it seems like a lot.
Yeah, we've got 13 here on our list. This is the top 13 blowouts in NBA history, and it seems like half of them were in December. Anyway, records at the time: the Kings 10-16, they would win 25. Mavs 2-21, they would finish 11-71. We've talked about these Mavs quite a bit, one of the worst teams in NBA history. In this game, they're starting the likes of Mike Uzzolino, Walter Bond, Doug Smith, Terry Davis, who finishes 4 points on 2 of 9 shooting, and Donald Hodge. The only Maverick who shines here, power forward Randy White, whose nickname, Mailman 2.
Okay.
He was a power forward out of Louisiana Tech, and he was called Mailman 2, apparently.
Okay, that's a terrible nickname. Let's be honest.
All right. It's not great, but I appreciate the audacity.
Mailman 2. I wouldn't want to be called Mailman 2. Like, give me my own name. Like, give me something else. I can't be the second,
Right. He was also apparently known as Mail Kid, Carl.
Now, Mail Kid. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Paper Boy would be good too,
Carl McClone. Like, he's a clone of Carl Malone. Carl Jr. And also Bird. Because why not?
Carl Jr.
Let's try that. Yeah, for a guy, five seasons, five nicknames. That's
I think we maybe have overdone it with the Randy White. Who was coming up with these? Like who was in charge of all these Randy White nicknames? Because
we'll have to talk to Basketball Reference about where their sources on nicknames. Because
Or was it a coach? Was it an announcer? Like who came up with these? Because they put a lot on this poor guy. And guess what? Well, he did not live up to the Carl McClone nickname. I'll tell you that. Yeah. So.
Listen, there was not a lot of joy for the Mavericks during this.
I guess let him have
five nicknames. Who cares?
You're right.
So in this game against the Mavericks, Mitch Richmond, 22 points, 6 assists, 3 steals on 9 of 11 shooting. Anthony Bonner off the bench, 23 points, 11 rebounds, 10 to 12 shooting, although he had 5 turnovers. Rod Higgins, 16 points in 14 minutes. He's 6 of 8 from the floor, 3 of 3 from three-pointer. He's shooting a lot of threes for this era, man. I don't know. Maybe we got to talk to him about not shooting so many threes. You know, that's it's not good basketball. But anyway, somehow for the Kings in this game, Walt Williams managed to shoot 3 of 15. Spud Webb went 1 of 5, and we definitely didn't need any more of Jim Less after he went 2 for 11. All these guys shot as bad or worse than anyone on the Mavs did. So I'm kind of baffled by how this margin occurred despite the Kings, you know, having like 3 of the guys who played significant minutes in this game shooting so terribly. But I guess it just didn't matter at that point, you know. You know, like the rebounding margin.
Yeah, the 93 Mavericks are so horrific that you can be awful and still destroy them. I mean, it is a rare.
Yeah. I mean, they out-rebounded them by 20, so that certainly helps.
That helps.
The turnovers, you know, the Mavs had 10 more turnovers, so that helps as well. So I guess it's how they got there. But yeah, this was pretty weird. So
yeah, because a lot of the other ones we talked about is just like everybody on the team just like shoots great. Like for some reason, everybody's just is crazy. Everybody shoots. The team shoots 60% or 70% or whatever, but this is like, this team has a lot of guys that stink and they still blow them out. I mean, this is definitely one of the more unique ones we've had.
Sure. And then this is just one of the weirdest stretchers in NBA history. So the Kings in the subsequent game, they would beat the 76ers by 56 points. So back-to-back games, they have, you know, 50 plus point blowouts. In that game, Walt Williams, he had 40 points for the only time in his career. He's off the bench, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals, 4 blocks. So, you know, Walt Williams is a killer here. And
well, they won the. I mean, they won the finals this year in 1993, right? That's when the King. Oh wait, no, they never.
Yeah,
I thought.
Right.
I'm mixing up my Kings championship seasons. They didn't win the championship in 1993. It seems seems impossible. They just they just blew two teams out. Like they're the best team in the league. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
the Bulls. The Bulls won the finals in 1993. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah, the Chicago Bulls.
Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, those guys. Yeah. Wow.
Weird. Okay.
All right. All right.
Yeah. Interesting.
How did they beat the Kings though?
it's confusing. Yeah. So. Yeah, anyway, there was a great SB Nation Dorktown had a great, you know, profile on this. So if you look before this game against the Mavericks, there was about one of 2,400 games in which one team had beaten another by at least 55 points. So obviously extremely rare. So the Kings do it twice in a row. The Kings outscore, you know, one team, you know, 293 points, allowing just 179. That's 114 point differential. The only other game in that stretch that even comes close was the 89 Suns had a, but that was even close to what they had done. They also basically a 4-game stretch where the game before this one, they beat Boston by 16. And then afterward they beat Denver by 20. So they were plus 150 during that 4-game stretch, but the rest of the time, in the other 78 games, they lost 73% of them, were outscored by over 400 points. So they finished.
This is ridiculous. What the hell?
Yeah. They finished this season with a negative 3.1 net rating. But if you took out the two blowouts, they would have had a negative 5.35 net rating. that's crazy. And the Mavs during this, they were historically bad, so they probably had a much worse net rating than this game did. But that was just, that would be like the net rating for not like among the worst teams ever in NBA history. Yeah, because the Mavs net rating was negative 15.2, so they were way beyond what the Kings would have been. They wouldn't quite have been bad, but yeah, it's interesting, you know, given. Given the situation. So anyway, yes. So as mentioned above, yeah, the 1992 Kings, you know, just one season before, they lost a game by 62 points. The Kings, who played in both of those games, Anthony Bonner, Lionel Simmons, Dwayne Coswell, Spud Webb, Jim Less, and Randy Brown. Dwayne Coswell did not play in the game against the Sixers, so but the rest of those guys did. So they were in all three of those games. One was a loss by 62. The other two were wins by 55 plus. Rod Higgins actually played for the Warriors in that big win over the Kings in 91. So he was on the right side of all three blowouts.
So what we're hearing is get Rod Higgins on your team is what it would.
Yeah,
I think you have a pretty good chance of blowing a team out by over 50 points if Rod Higgins is on your team.
Check Rod Higgins as plus minus, because I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's is pretty exceptional. So
I'm going to not do that because
right.
I don't think. Yeah, you're probably right. It's seems to be the exception to the rule, but I'm going to go under the theory that he is the rule and that you need to have Rod Higgins on your team if you're going
to. You absolutely need to have Rod Higgins on your team because of all the great teams that Rod Higgins played for, like the 1991 Warriors were pretty good.
Yeah.
All right.
The Kevin Lockery led Chicago Bulls in 1985. Oh, yeah, they were absolutely. Great when they were 38-44 or
sure.
whatever.
All right. Yeah.
Apparently not great. So you had asked the question a little bit earlier about the games in September. 6 of the 13 happened in December. So
That's a pretty high total. I mean,
yeah, it's not high as I thought, but it's pretty damn high considering the amount of months that the season goes in.
Sure.
Six of these blowouts happen in December. So yeah, these are all these are, like we said, the all-time biggest blowouts. And obviously, if we take the playoff games out of this, it increases a lot more.
Right, that's true.
Because, those obviously will not occur in December. That would be weird. So this has been fun. Big blots.
Yeah, big blots. Yeah, good times.
Some guys. Yeah. Remembered some bobs. So that's
remembered, all. a few bobs. Yeah, definitely going to have to dive into the bobs a little bit more. You know, bob and weave, perhaps, through those. So, all right. So, everyone, thank you for checking us out. We are part of the Fansided network of podcasts. You can find us at The Step Back, where there's great NBA content throughout the entire season. You can also find all of our shows at overandbacknba.com. And we are on iTunes and not quite iTunes anymore, but we're on all the podcast platforms. Just search for Over and Back. We're there. Leave us a rating and review if you like us. Just ignore us if you don't like us. And also, social media. We have Facebook and Twitter at Over and Back NBA. So if you want to see us socialing some media, we will be there. And leave us just give us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back again soon.